Call the Joint Legislative Task Force on County Payments to order. It is Wednesday, February the 15th, 2012. I want to welcome everybody this morning. We have a full agenda, so we'll get started. The first item on our agenda, this is an informational meeting, by the way, and the first item on our agenda is the expansion of the Physical Control Board, and I'm going to call on my co-chairs to talk a little bit about why this is on the agenda, what kind of discussion took place before we put it on the agenda. So, Co-Chair Robert?
Thank you, and our feeling, and I know that Representative Hannah will also be speaking, and we have hopefully people can see it as well, a little summary of our conversation about it, but what we're looking at is that in our conversation last time, it was clear that coming in after the fact, after the train wreck, was not the best way to actually make a stable government continue to function. And so the idea was that a county would request, when they get within 24 or 12 months, that this fiscal assessment board would be set up and start coming to work with them. The idea was that they would have access to those shared funds. It would be made up of a board of five appointed members plus the county commissioners. So they would be a part of the board, and they would start looking at how they can proceed to either get the county back on track by looking at those kinds of things and or what's the next steps. And as we've talked, and again, Representative Hannah and I, we're looking at saying the board does need to have an ending point. It needs to resolve it and move on. And we think that that may be 24 months. We can look at that and have conversations about that. There will be a time certain when it ends, and that it has in place a plan, and that plan either has to be voted by the members of the community or some other process has to take place within that 24 months to say, here's our recommendations, here's what you have to do, vote on it. It may be that the decision is that they're going to move to find another county that's adjoining them that they can join with, whatever, but this group needs to come to a conclusion. It doesn't need to keep running this state, this county government for the long term. It's a process that will have an ending point and some recommendations. We expect that its cost should be, we know these kinds are tough, but that will be a part of the whole process, and when we look at the shared funds, that's going to have to cover some of those costs as well. We have had some conversations, it's not in this first draft, we've had some conversations that maybe there is at that same 24-month period, there's an ending point that says that the state is going to impose an increase in property tax, an increase in whatever, based on the average of the counties around them, so that if in fact they are going to be absorbed, they don't have to lower because they're joining, unless the county itself votes and takes control and has a plan that does that. And that's just a conversation that I would like people to think about. I'm not sure that it's the right answer yet, but it's a way of saying this is going to happen and this group is going to decide what they need to have, and if you can't get there before we set you out there to be absorbed by another county, we're going to put you in a position where the other county isn't going to be harmed by that process. So that's for the conversation, and I'll let Representative Hannah actually any other comments that you think about what you want?
Madam Chair, thank you. Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. Speaker Roblin did a nice job of opening this up. I'll just talk briefly about when we had the conversation about a committee that would, fiscal assistance board, if you will, that would come and help. The idea was that you could then pool some of the shared services dollars and help. As Speaker Roblin mentioned, in order to make that work, we believe you have to then have county commissioners be voting members, otherwise you start to get in conflict with county charters and things like that. So we're trying to track that line down and make sure we know what we're talking about here with the folks in legal to say, can you do this if you include county commissioners as voting members? Because if you look at the notes where it says, you know, money appropriated from the state for shared services and questions would be deposited into this account, you got to have voting members from both to do that. So we're talking about that initially. We believe it's possible if you include county commissioners as voting members, but we're chasing that out. So we want to make sure we know that that's actually a path you could take and make it work from a legal perspective. The second thing is, and again, Speaker Roblin mentioned this, we've talked about and don't have, and we're anxious to hear from the counties and others involved about the idea that it would be date certain. And that's simply to say that if this happened, you would be in an emergency. The idea is, let's get it figured out, but let's have a timeline for which you must have a plan in place so that you don't end up with two or three fiscal assistance boards around the state of Oregon running 2, 4, 6, 8 counties from a government style, that you literally say you have X amount of time period for which to create the plan that would create mergers of counties. So those are some ideas that we have out there that we're hopeful to hear back from, and we'll see.
And the only other thing I just want to make sure, because we've been talking about a lot, and I don't know that it was clear to other people, is that we're changing what we currently have that says this group will come in and assist afterwards and only assist in public safety. This one would assist in all shared services and basically changes it from just one to all of those shared services, and that it comes in before the wreck has actually happened to try to help not have the wreck occur at all. You know, put the, as we were talking about earlier, you know, put the gates up ahead of time so that there isn't the crash. So that's, I just want to make sure that was clear as well, because that's different from what we currently have in statute.
Committee members, there is a sheet in your packet, if you haven't found it, that says at the top, Potential County Payments Task Force Legislative Concepts, and it gives you some of the ideas that you can take a look at. Now we'll...
When I just want to clarify and make sure. This only happens when the county asks for it. I mean, it's not about the state coming in and imposing. It's saying the counties have figured out what they can do, and they've asked to have it happen. So, yeah.
Senator Johnson?
I am in general accord with this, but the one piece that might be kind of nuanced is some opportunity for this board to call on a level of agency coordination that is not always apparent. I mean, it would be some request that agencies have a super cooperative role, or that they would be engaged in some way to be as helpful and attentive to one of these situations as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Senator Johnson. Senator Grodd.
Thank you. Actually, I would have a question for Co-Chair Roblin. You mentioned something that we're going to be able to raise taxes unilaterally on some of these counties if they fail. And in the task force before that we had, that was constitutionally not an option because of 5 and 50. So I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get around 5
and 50. All of those things have to be looked at to make sure that they are a legal option. I agree that that could be a problem. There, in talking to a few people, they've said there may be a way to say down the road, if you haven't taken a vote and so on and so forth, X, Y, Z could happen. I don't know that it's possible, but thank you.
All right. Now I'm going to welcome to the table for the discussion of the expansion of the Fiscal Control Board, Michael Jordan, Mike MacArthur, and James Buchholz.
Right.
Buckles.
Welcome, gentlemen, in any order that is agreeable to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. The notion of a fiscal control board or a fiscal assistance board came from the County Payments Task Force from 2009. It was recommendation number 53. Let me read that. The state should pursue legislation to establish financial control boards and other procedures to deal with counties in fiscal distress. As a first step, the state should authorize standards and procedures for the declaration of a public safety emergency. So that was pursued with legislation, Senate Bill 77. I've given you copies of 203-095, which is the current legislation, which focuses on the public safety side of this. became quite apparent early that this didn't go far enough. We knew that it didn't go far enough. The idea is to get ahead of the problem, as Co-Chair Roblin stated. So what we need to do is revise and update this fiscal assistance legislation to really deal with the situations that we're seeing. Because the idea that we're trying to get ahead of here is that the state will have some liability here if a county is not able to deliver adequate public safety services or other services. So how do we do that? Well, we think by combining a group of so-called experts from the state and folks from the county, the leaders from the county, into this work group that will make recommendations to the county and perhaps to the legislature if legislation's needed, it goes both ways. So what we're thinking is that this is, Co-Chair Roblin said, a board that would be empowered for a certain period of time to make these recommendations. It would be broadly across all shared services. And at this point right now, we're having a little trouble with the decision-making authorities. There's right. constitutional problems. We're dealing with some charter counties. And that, you know, for others to make decisions about that county, it really is a constitutional problem. When you're talking about Lane, Josephine, Jackson are all our charter counties. So at this point, you know, we're recommending that we just go forward with the first two concepts of setting up the board and how it's established, make it simply advisory, have a financial advisory board, and then in the interim, before 2013, we'll begin to look at what else we might be able to do to give this board some more authority if that's necessary. So I think that kind of brings us to where we are today in our discussions.
Senator Johnson.
I guess one of the things that occurs to me is some way to harmonize activities in this building with the existence of one of these boards. One or more of these boards would only come into effect in extremis. And I'm thinking particularly in the public safety realm, we're cutting services, for example. I don't know that this is the current status, but I am informed that we have a new recruit class of OSP graduating right now, and they'll be the first to be laid off after we've trained them for 16 weeks and had contact with them for longer than that. So we're defunding in this building some of the exact services that this fiscal control board might speak to in a county in extremis. And I don't know whether or not we've thought through how to do that, to figure out what we do here would have effect on counties that are deeply troubled enough to have one of these fiscal control boards in place.
Yes. Chair, Senator Johnson, we're certainly in uncharted waters here in general with the governance structures that we're facing and the financing of those governance structures. And so I think we just have to try it. I think we have to set one of these up and see how it works. And the makeup of the committee, I hope, will be representative of both the legislature and the state administration so that we have the points of view of those who are involved in these discussions here and who know the budgets and know what's happening at the state level. Perhaps Mr. Jordan would like to comment from the state's point of view.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I think the point you bring up...
You need to introduce yourself.
Excuse me. For the record, my name is Michael Jordan. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the state and the Director of the Department of Administrative Services. Again, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, the point you bring up is a good one. I think Mike is right on in that this is an experiment. We're trying to figure out how to make this process better. It is, at its essence, an issue of cooperation and collaboration, and so I guess in lieu of any remarks I would make, I would like to comment regarding the structure of this, realizing that there's a constitutional problem with giving this board absolute decision-making power. I'm wondering, and I don't know the answer to this, I'm wondering about how we can strengthen the power of the board to convene. I don't quite know what that looks like. You know, in a legal sense, I would say subpoena power, but I don't quite know what that looks like here. However, the real value of this is to compel players to the table to solve problems. I think giving the board itself some kind of definitive timeline, you get to work for this much time and you got to solve the problem, that puts the pressure of time on the board. The board needs to be able to compel people to participate. I'll just hearken back to a previous life. The way we got 25 cities and 3 counties to come to the table at Metro was the Metro Council had the power to make them do things. And so it brought them to the table. For better or worse, it brought them to the table. And so I would just suggest, short of absolute decision-making power, that this board have some kind of power to compel people to participate, including cities and special districts and adjoining counties, just so their staffs would participate in the problem-solving discussion and ultimately, excuse me, governing bodies. So that's just...
Co-Chair Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Michael, I like what you said, although when you started talking about Metro, I almost got up and ran. So that's not my favorite, but...
Didn't want to scare anybody.
So. Mike, I want to go back to something you said. It was my understanding that the charter county issue is uncharted water, i.e. very difficult to say to a charter county. But in this case, and I'm just going to ask you, why wouldn't we move forward with a plan that other than charter counties, you might go ahead? I mean, my point is... From what we currently know, Curry County is in the most dire strait. They are not a charter county. Mm-hmm. If this is, and I hate to use the word experiment, but we're trying to solve a problem that we haven't had happen yet. So to some degree, it's an effort to get in front of a problem. Why wouldn't we go ahead and take the action possible with a non-charter county?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Co-Chair Hannah, I think that would be advisable.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, let's continue with your regular presentation. Who is... Mr. McGon, are you finished with yours?
I think I've summarized, I think, where we want to
okay.
Jared,
all
where
right.
we want to go with this legislation. I think actually, Co-Chair Roblin set it up beautifully, and I think we're still working on the actual language of that bill, and hope to have that back for you next week.
All right, Mr. Jordan, do you have other comments you'd like to
Madam
make?
Madam Chair, really not any too many expansive comments. I guess I would suggest to the committee that any of these processes are difficult without some funding, and so I would suggest that we need to take a look at how we get some money somewhere to, in anticipation of this perhaps convening before 13, that we need to take a hard look at how we support this effort and make sure it can work. Shared funding effort, monies being flexible in the shared services realm. I'm not quite sure how we could do that, but certainly that's an issue. And then I guess I just want to reiterate again, this is a crisis and a difficult problem, but it's also an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for us to re-examine how we collaborate between levels of government and also horizontally on the landscape of Oregon between counties and cities, how we provide these services. And while it's a very difficult problem, it's also a chance to come together and think about how we do this in the future. And potentially, we'll find answers to questions that have vexed us for a long time. We may find new models in the discussion that can help us more broadly in the state of Oregon. And so I would just suggest that in the architecture of this committee, you give them lots of flexibility to convene people to solve problems. And I think we'll learn some things out of this, even though it's a very difficult crisis and we face difficult times. Sometimes we come up with our best solutions in those situations.
I think that within cities, and in my past life, I found that cities do quite well together and in communicating. Mm-hmm. There's a border, though, that there's this line, you know, the demarcation line of some kind, that between cities and counties, that doesn't always work. And so this would address that. So, Co-Chair Hannah?
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, I know, again, we've talked about this, the charter versus non-charter county, and I want everyone to understand, we had a conversation around charter counties that included the double majority. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. as you are studying how it might work, that if a fiscal assistance board were created with county commissioners, and then you included double majority voting if that resolves the problem and the charter county issue. So I'm throwing that out there for everyone to hear because we've had the conversation. Maybe we should be inviting charter county folks and their legal teams to study whether or not that can work, and I'm sure you can help us through that. So that's item one. Item two, and James, you've been before us before, but we again have had this conversation around if two counties decide to merge and the current ORS that says basically you can merge the two tax rates. We got to get to the point here. Is there a point at which we need to have a conversation about something different there and how you do it? I mean, because we've all sort of had the conversation around it's one thing to ask two counties to vote to merge. It's another thing when the anchor county, if you will, the one who's sinking fastest, is absorbed by one who is also sinking but asked to do so with a tax rate that won't pay the bills. And so you having a thought about that? Or
Madam Chair, Co-Chair Hannah, Jim Buchholz, Department of Revenue Administrator of the Property Tax Division. I don't have anything special for you. The statute, let me just say that I'm not an attorney, and our AGs get nervous when I practice law. So, but we have looked into this, and the statutes require, the Constitution actually requires a blended rate for the two counties. So, and it's essentially the amount of dollars that the county, or the two separate jurisdictions would have raised separately. And so I think you're right that if one county, an anchor county as you've termed it, pulls it down, it is going to pull down the other county too and potentially with it. So there we may need to look at options, if there are options for raising that up for everybody, at least in the short term until we can get stable.
Madam Chair, I think Michael has a comment about the same question, if you might.
Madam Chair, Speaker Hannah, if the AG gets nervous when Jim practices law, they really get nervous when I start talking about this. But there is another model for expanding a tax rate across a landscape that doesn't currently belong to a jurisdiction, and that's the annexation process for cities. There is a double majority rule in statute, which at least in essence is the replacement for folks voting on a particular tax. So the constitutionality issue is taken care of through the double majority rules on annexation to cities. I guess my brainstorming here is I'm wondering if in lieu of the blended rate, there were a choice given regarding a vote. In other words, there would be a vote of one county to actually annex to the other county or some kind of rule that would help get around, if you will, the constitutional issue here. I don't know that that's possible. Again, this is kind of under the rubric of brainstorming. You certainly have a dilemma between two counties with disparate rates. That's, however, not unheard of in Oregon law, and I'm wondering if that model can't be thought about.
It's certainly a deterrent, however, to two counties being excited about going together. Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. You've been very patient, and thank you very much. You have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment for Mr. Jordan and then an observation. Some of us get nervous when the AG practices the law, so two-way street there. You know, we're all want to help. We're all sort of enlisting in the bucket brigade, and we're filling buckets and running toward the smoke. But in the meantime, both Representative Roblin and I serve on the Legislative Commission for Indian Services. Just a cautionary note, there's tribal lands in these counties, there's ceded lands in these counties, and under the auspices of a government-to-government relationship, we would be required to consult on any proposals. Mm-hmm. So it's an easy detail to skip over. Mm-hmm. It's one of those up jumps the devil kind of things when you're planning and scheming and everybody's locked and loaded and somebody says, but wait, there's more. Mm-hmm. So I would just urge you, go to the Legislative Commission on Indian Services, brief them on the discussions that are being held, and ask for a mechanism by which they would input to this process. And if that conversation itself isn't productive, it will certainly save some misery later when people point out we didn't follow the law. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Buchholz, one of the things that we discussed, and if you have a copy of this potential payment task force in front of you, we have put it in one of the bullet points. But we talked about the CAFA funds, and you know, if you're not qualified to receive those, the concern is that we didn't want those funds taken and spread over other counties that maybe didn't need them. So could you comment on that?
Certainly, Madam Chair. This was something that we actually raised as being an issue, and let me be clear on this. The statutes require the Department of Revenue to step in and assume responsibility for, excuse me, the appraisal function, and we absolutely will do that if it's triggered. But we won't do a very good job. In fact, we want to be sure and make it clear that we won't do as an adequate a job as what the county could probably have done with their reduced funding, because they've got the infrastructure in place to be able to take care of the activities, and we would have to set up the infrastructure, and we're not in the business of doing this. We are managers of the system, but we're not the boots on the ground that is in the county. So I just want to make that clear. But having said that, if we have to do this, if it's something that is triggered by the statute, what we want to make sure is that we have as many available dollars that would have gone to the county for that particular function stay in the county that needs it and not have it be distributed to the other 35 counties as the CAFA statutes require now. So that's why we raised the issue.
Well, I think that would give a lot of comfort to the counties because I think those that don't qualify. There's something else came to my mind. You know, there is something in statute, though, that you have a year. Isn't that right? To become qualified? One of the county people may be able to answer that for me. But in other words, you don't qualify for CAFA right now, but don't you have an opportunity sit with some flexibility?
Madam Chair, there is an alternative certification process for CAFA. And in a nutshell, what it says is that the Department of Revenue can enter into an agreement with a county to certify the county expenditures at a less than adequate level as long as they have a plan to get them back into adequacy within 3 years.
Okay. All right. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think last time we met, we also said that we were going to produce a couple other bills besides this big one. One of them had to do specifically with CAFA, and I know that's being produced, and it would probably end up, I know our chairs in the Rules Committee, it probably going to end up in revenue, and it looks just at CAFA and saying, how do we do that? And I think our goal is to try to figure out how do we keep that in the right hands of the people who should be making those decisions, but also really encourage that same deal that we don't want it to lose that money because we want that to happen. I don't know if Representative Barnhart has anything to say about that, but I know we do have another bill on that one. So,
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I completely agree. The purpose of the way the CAFA system is set up, as I understand it, House Revenue has touched this issue several times during the time that I've been chair or co-chair, was basically to encourage counties to adequately fund their A&T function. But I don't think that the current statute contemplates the situation that we're facing now. And I really appreciate the suggestion that we make sure that the thing that was intended to encourage the county to act doesn't become a barrier to the state in the event that it has to.
Any response? Any other questions on this particular subject? I see Gail Rydell has joined us, and so would you like to, are you going to be talking about the funding assistance payments, or are you going to be just joining in with your other two presenters here?
Madam Chair, for the record, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, Mike MacArthur asked me to come up and sit since we're talking about assessment of taxation, and I am scheduled in the next to talk about the mid-year correction for assessment of taxation. So I have nothing to add. I think these are points of all excellent points that have been made.
All right. Mr. Jordan, Mr. Bichette, thank you very much. Senator Garak?
I'd just like to make a comment, and that is the problem that we're in is that we're not able to harvest trees, and that's a federal problem. I agree with that. But I think the state needs to come to the realization that scrutinizing the Constitution, I don't think, for me personally, is an option. I don't think we can get there with that. I think the state has to pony up some of the responsibility for this, and I think that is financially carrying these counties until the timber harvest goes up. And I think that's going to be the way out, and that's not something that we seem to be exploring. And that's just my own personal opinion.
Senator Garrett, would you expand a little bit on that? Because the state, every time we've discussed it, the people say, well, there's just no way, we've got too much on our plate, and et cetera, et cetera.
So, well, this is a state that we have been blessed with a tremendous amount of timber. And I do not believe that the government, being us, the state, and the governor, past governors, have done a very good job of voicing our arguments to the federal government as to the dilemma that we have here and how important timber harvest is, and especially to the environment and to the well-being of these counties. And so I think that we have shirked our duties as a state to do that. And in doing so, we have undermined the viability of these counties to the point that they're going to be bankrupt. And so now we're trying to find a way to skirt the Constitution so that we can make Jackson County take in Curry County or Josephine County. I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with skirting the Constitution. I don't agree with skirting the Constitution of the federal Constitution. So I think that we have to look at how we're going to bail out these counties and not skirt the Constitution and not make Jackson County take Curry County in. So, I mean, I like, you know, we've been down this road before as far as the constitutionality of doing that. And everything in the original one, it was not deemed to be a constitutional thing that we could do. So I agree that we need to investigate that, but this isn't the first time we've done it. And I think we need to do some set-asides to help these counties make it through the tough times, and then when the timber harvest or things turn around, that the counties can get back on their feet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification. Are there other questions before I call up the next panel? Any comments at all on the suggestions about the subpoena, the duties or the authority of the task force from the committee? Mr. Jordan suggested the money, the models, the subpoenas, just the structure. Senator Johnson.
I guess my observation would be, following one of Mr. Jordan's other comments, that this is supposed to be a collaborative process, figuring out together how to solve a problem. And somehow conferring the power of subpoena seems to run exactly counter to the notion of collaborative, shared problem solving. It seems to me a little bit heavy-handed. If we're in such dire straits that we can't convene ourselves to work out a serious problem, we're probably toast already.
Okay. Any other comments on that? Senator Perioli.
Yes, I have to absolutely agree with the good senator from the coast and tell you that there is a lot of frustration and a lot of anger in counties where joblessness due to federal policy may lead some people to conclude that what we're doing with subpoena power is in fact extending police power. And you can't describe it any other way. The subpoena is in fact a compelling by the use of a higher authority. It's police power. It's not far in some people's imagination to the Declaration of Martial Law, and you're playing right into people's paranoia about the state of collapse and what happens if there is a collapse economically and otherwise. And you know, I agree with the idea that if this is supposed to be a collaborative thing, if activity between elected public officials trying to avoid terrible consequences, that you probably don't want to be using police power to compel people to provide information that I think they automatically should be interested in making sure they make the case for you. So I do agree with Senator Johnson on this issue. I take it a step further. Lots of folks are anticipating some use of police power, and to the extent only their imagination can adequately capture. So I would say if you could avoid that, that'd be good.
Co-Chair Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Mr. Jordan's participation and conversation. Nowhere in any of our documentation is subpoena. We have not suggested subpoena. I want to make sure that we read directly from the language that we're giving consideration to, that to include the county commissioners from the county requesting assistance. Again, these are counties who have said to this opportunity, we need some help. Please come together and bring us that help. It is about shared public services. We don't have subpoena in there. I personally believe that when you find a county facing insolvency, they will be requesting this help at the last resort. Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't want to speak for Mr. Jordan, but I think the idea was we have to find a way that we can ask people to come and participate. I fully believe when they see the position a county will be in, they'll run to the table because they're going to want to figure out a way to provide the basic services required to keep a county afloat. And then further, they're going to want to have a discussion about, and I don't know what's unconstitutional about a discussion about a merger of two counties. I haven't found that. I haven't seen it. Nobody from the legal branch has said to me, don't have a conversation about that. It's unconstitutional. So subpoena's not in here. These are counties who are asking for assistance.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. We have people that are listening to our meetings, and I just think it's very good when we can clarify and our position and what we really plan and be very clear about what we mean, so that we don't have people getting too excited. There's enough concern out there about the situation. So thank you very much for that. All right, I will call up now the County Assessment Function Funding Assistance Payments Panel, and that is Alex and Gil and James.
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Let me just refresh your memory about this concept. You discussed resurrecting a statute that was put in for fiscal year 06-07 in anticipation of the end of an earlier version of Secure Rural Schools that permitted a county that had qualified at the beginning of the year for CAFA funds to make it a downward adjustment, in other words, to reduce its budget for assessment of taxation by no more than 10% if it was one of the qualifying counties. And that was defined as a county that was dependent at least 10% of its general fund on secure rural schools. A little bit of background so you understand the system that Representative Barnhart knows very well. The beginning of a year, counties submit their proposed budgets for assessment of taxation to the Department of Revenue. If the Department of Revenue considers them adequate to maintain minimal standards statewide, then that budget will be approved for a grant. So the county will get the grant, and then, let's say in the middle of the year, at least during this year, there was an opportunity for a county to say, oops, we We don't have enough money for assessment of taxation at this point. We need to reduce it a little bit, and that would permit them to do that. Now, the standard for qualifying counties for the law in 06-07 was at least 10% reliant on secure rural schools. What we have today is, in effect, no secure rural schools. So it raises the issue for you of how you want to move this forward. It could be moved forward, but you'd have to decide which counties would qualify. 12 counties qualified in 06-07. You could name those same counties if you wish. There may be some other ways to do this, but I would advise that you confer with legislative council to avoid any constitutional toe stubbing. But that's the concept that you wanted to consider again, resurrect, and that's what's before you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Buchholz, Administrator of the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. I think Gil described it fairly well. The one thing I would add is that the reason why the statute is in place for CAFA now, Department of Revenue certifies the budgets for the counties at the beginning of the year, and that sets the percentage for the county of receiving or the revenues that they receive for the CAFA distribution. The formula is the county budget for assessment and taxation divided by the sum total of all of the county budgets statewide for assessment and taxation. And so that's why in the statute there is a requirement that a county appropriate 100% of what they said they'd appropriate at the beginning of the year and not disappropriate mid-year. We have a county that has done that, and it's the statutes are very clear right now without any kind of relief for that county. The Department of Revenue will have to withhold their CAFA revenues, making their hole deeper, which doesn't seem conscionable, at least to us, during this time. And so that's why we advanced the concept. Gil raised an important issue. It's something that I just heard about really yesterday, that maybe the language that's in the bill doesn't target specifically the counties that we want to target for this particular relief. In 2007, when the bill was passed originally, there were three sideboards, if you will, around it, and I think that three sideboards need to remain, identifying the counties that are most at risk because of the secure rural schools, making sure that the cut is no less than 10% and that they still are able to maintain the minimum standards after the cut. And however you want to define the or to target the specific counties is fine. We just want to make sure that there's something in there that does do that.
Okay. Co-Chair Hanna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to make a point, and then I'm going to ask a question that I hope you all will help us answer, and it may not be the answer is possible today. The idea behind fixing the issue with CAFA is primarily around, from my perspective, keeping the money for the assessment process in local control. Okay? Everybody needs to understand, the idea behind this is to say, you got a county that's in big trouble. Currently, you divide the pot and send the money to everybody else. This says they're in trouble, the declaration has been made, and you keep it so that the local assessment process can continue to happen. So this is about making sure we keep the money in a local place so that the people who have been continually responsible for assessment can continue with that function, and we don't make, as Jim said, make the hole worse. So I want to be clear on the record, that's what we're attempting to do here. The second thing about this, and the question that I want to ask, is on the 10% piece. Now, I've heard, Gil, you may be able to answer this, that certain of the counties were quite concerned about the 10% level. I don't know. I can't answer that question. Maybe you'll be able to, but there were counties out there who maybe thought that was an arbitrarily selected number and doesn't fit. So I'd like to have your input on that.
Alex, you want to? I can take a shot. Senator Verger, Co-Chairs Roblin, and Representative Hanna. To your question, Representative Hanna, and for the record, Alex
Introduce
Kyler,
yourself.
Intergovernmental Relations Manager for Lane County. The bill as written, I want to clarify first, is was deemed a midterm correction. And I think the situation, at least that Lane County is in, and my understanding is probably about half a dozen counties are in, is going in now to the whole CAFA sort of application process with an understanding that we've got some difficulties meeting those standards. And so I'll speak in a minute to, I think, some amendments that might be required to refine the concept a bit. But to your question regarding the 10%, our county administrator, for instance, has suggested to departments going into this post-SRS era that general fund departments, which A&T in Lane County is 100% general funded, general fund, cut their budgets by 25.5%. So in this conversation that we've had over the last several days, she, for instance, knew that there was a 10% existing in the bill, and we became a little concerned with that. We've suggested in the, what I'll speak to in a minute here, is a 15% allowance. I don't know how to suggest that really any percentage is probably somewhat arbitrary, but we've got to have a number at some point in time. And I think what we will look at in the discussion at the county is, should this bill advance, we've gotten 15%, as opposed to the other situation, which was director or assessor Spicker, take a 25% cut, realize that there's no way you're going to get your CAFA grant, which now turns into a 50% cut for the department, and then we're forced into this situation really where DOR has to come in. And as you've heard previously from testimony, and thank you very much for describing that, having DOR come in shouldn't be the committee's first priority, but really ought to be the last resort. How do we get local people to remain in their chairs? And I think the conversation that will occur in Lane County then is, okay, the assessor has been asked to take a 25% cut. We've perhaps advanced some legislation that allows for a 15% cut. We're going to have to deal within the auspices of the Budget Committee to find that other 10% and distribute it elsewhere.
Madam Chair, Senator Hanna, Representative Hanna, Jim Buchholz, Department of Revenue. I think it's important to remember that the 10% question that you're asking here goes to the mid-year correction. It doesn't go to certifying the budgets for the coming fiscal year. It's just the pressure relief valve that allows a county to cut somewhat midterm. Representative Barnhart may recall in 2007 when the bill was first advanced, we left that blank and allowed the Revenue Committee to fill in an amount. And the Revenue Committee chose 10%. And part of the discussion or the philosophy behind that was, since this is a mid-year correction, there isn't a lot of opportunity for the Department of Revenue to determine whether or not that reduced budget is, in fact, adequate to maintain the minimum standards. We at the Department of Revenue have a very results-based look at when we deem the adequacy for the counties. And typically what we'll do at the beginning of a year is, if a county wants to make a cut and we aren't absolutely certain that they can't do it, we'll allow it and then take a year look back to see if they were able to do that and then make corrections after the next year, because we want to allow for a county to be innovative in the way that they do their business. We don't want to necessarily say you have to do it in the way that we would do it if we were the ones administering the function in your county. But there isn't a whole lot of time, I think, for the department to take a look at the individual county efforts at mid-year. So that's why it was, I think, some sort of an attempt, and it is arbitrary. Yeah, you could put 15, you could put 10, it's whatever is your pleasure, but it's just some sort of an attempt to limit the amount that a county could cut mid-year until the department has an opportunity to take a look and see whether or not it meets the standards.
Buchholz, what was the third sidebar, the third limitation? There was the There was the at-risk, and then there was the 10%. What was the third one?
Madam Chair, it was being able to still maintain the minimum standards for providing an adequate assessment and taxation system in the county after the cut.
After the tax. All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, let me add just a moment. That's the big
yeah.
question. That's the big hurdle. And it's going to be difficult for Lane County, for example, 25%, even 15% to say that they can do that. We're really going from this concept to the earlier concept you discussed about the Fiscal Assistance Board having that platform that they work on which they work include assessment of taxation. This is the difficult question. So,
Co-Chair Roper.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of questions. The first one has to do with, so this 10%, the sideboards are all around mid-year corrections. So what is the standard for the beginning of the year with respect to getting their CAFA? Is it just that they believe that it's an adequate plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Roland, the standard is being able to meet the minimum standards for adequacy. It goes to 308, 232, 234, Chapter 309, and all of the other statutes that maintain equity and uniformity in the tax system.
And if you decide that it is not meeting that standard, then they won't get the CAFA funds for the year. Is that the only restriction, or do you automatically take over the function of that office, which I would rather stayed with that office? That's what I'm, yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, no, it's only for purposes of being certified to receive the CAFA grant. The other statute that requires the Department of Revenue to step in and take over or assume responsibility is that's triggered by the county not being able to make appraisals in accordance with law. So that's something that happens down the road.
Okay. The one safety valve we have at the beginning of the year is the one that Jim referred to earlier, that a county can enter into an agreement negotiated with the Department of Revenue to come back into compliance within 3 years. And then it's a collaborative work plan that's agreed to by the department and the county over a three-year period. But that's the only safety valve you have at the beginning of the year at this point.
Okay.
Okay. Alex, you ready?
I am. Thank you. And members of the committee, again, Alex Kyler, Lane County Intergovernmental Relations Manager. And before I begin with the description of this, I just want to say thanks very much to both the committee, and there's a number of folks in the audience who have been working with us. Really, this discussion about the assistance board has almost been playing out with regards to the CAFA discussions that have been occurring, because when Lane County became aware of the interest in sort of the redrafting of 3532 from 2007, we recognized this issue that the mid-year correction wasn't necessarily the vehicle that would really work for us in the environment that we find ourselves in right now. I've described how we're going into this budget development season for our FY13 with some fairly significant cuts or direction for cuts at the department levels. And the assessment function is one of these functions in the county that doesn't just benefit the county. In Lane County, we have actually 83 taxing districts. We're collecting about $400 million totally for those taxing districts, and the county between 9 and 10%, 9 and 10 cents on the dollar comes to the county for its purposes. So it's a very important function, and it's one of these things that I've started to describe as where if you start to undo these kinds of services, some pretty significant strings start to get pulled and have impacts with regards to other governmental entities. So we had some, I think, pretty fruitful conversations with the Department of Revenue about what might work for the half dozen or so counties that find themselves going into this budget year and seeking some relief, and I've put a document in front of you titled Conceptual Amendment. So the first item bolded is the mid-year 2011-12 flexibility. That's essentially the 3532 redraft that you've just discussed. What we would ask for is some additional language that says 1213 flexibility for distressed counties. It would be a one-year freeze, essentially, at the prior year's percentage rate from the certified amounts granted during as a percent of the entirety of the CAFA fund from last year. So that's the freeze is based on the certified percentage from FY12. There would be a sort of a barrier to entry, the threshold for entry, and Gil did a nice job describing how the language in 3532 probably doesn't quite work as well, given that SRS has been sunset now, and moving forward, there really isn't money that would qualify for us to reach that 10% threshold. I've suggested a look back to fiscal year 2008, but there may be other things that that legal counsel would suggest you look at. We'd provide for, in this amendment, that the reduction in county expenditures doesn't exceed the 15% for the FY12 certified expenditure, so it could be no greater than a 15% reduction from last year's expenditure. And then there would be a mutually agreed plan between DOR and the county to discuss how to best meet these requirements that Jim discussed being in statute and ORS 308 and some other places. There's about a dozen different functions that the assessor provides, and so rather than sort of getting into the prescriptive language in the bill, we thought it would be better just to have a mutually agreed upon plan and with the outcome there to minimize the revenue impacts to the local taxing districts. That would be the best outcome in this next year, is to make sure that what we're doing is maintaining the maximum amount of revenue for those taxing districts. And we suggest the creation of a task force. You may be aware there have been previous efforts to look at the CAFA fund in its entirety. When CAFA was first created, there was sort of a target to fund the counties to about 33% of the total A&T budget. In Lane County, we're down to 22% in our last adopted budget, and thinking that we'll be down around 18% in this budget. So over the years, you've seen the amount of the CAFA fund shrinking, and so discussions about how to make that fund more robust have occurred in the past, and this appears to be a good time to reignite those conversations. The final thing I'd like to close with is I did put a note down at the bottom that maybe there's a way that this becomes undone. We are working very hard in Washington, D.C. to see if there's some relief. It is about the same as it's ever been, where we just are working very hard, and we hope to see a solution, but it's really dependent on Congress. And if, however, something does pass, there would be a relief valve in the bill to suggest, okay, you've gotten the relief you needed. This is no longer necessary.
Alex, for the benefit of those that are listening to the hearing, would you just elaborate a little bit on exactly that? We have two things going on in Washington, D.C. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think, Senator Verger, you're referring to different House and Senate concepts.
Yes.
Sure. In the Senate, our understanding is that there is a proposal to be a sort of a scaled-down secure rural schools proposal, which would ramp down from our last year's level and continue on a four-year, I hesitate to call it a glide path anymore, but it would continue this ramp-down amount of dollars for counties, and essentially dollars just printed right from the Treasury and distributed to counties. In the House, the approach is a bit more what we characterize as active management, and it's a plan to reform how timber harvest occurs with regards to the United States Forest Service, and we hope on the ONC lands. The ONC lands are unique to Western Oregon, and that in and of itself has become a little bit of a stumbling block with regards to language in the bill. But I can inform the committee that the bill was actually printed this morning, And so that's a significant piece of news. We're in the process of reviewing it right now, but it is available for review on the House Natural Resources Committee webpage.
Co-Chair Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alex, you talked about two bills and said, and then said the bill. Which bill was printed?
I'm sorry, the House bill was printed.
House bill.
Okay. Can I follow up with a
sure.
question? Alex, you talked about CAFA funds, and I think what you said was the percentage of funds received by the county have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
How about the amount of money? Has it gone down or up?
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, it has gone down as well. A couple things. The two major funding sources, actually there were three, but now there are two major funding sources for the program is filing fees that depend a lot on refinance, on activities, on change of ownership, and the percentage on delinquent property tax payments, the penalty on that goes into the CAFA account. The third source was a $5 million biennial appropriation that your body chose to sweep a couple of sessions ago into your general fund.
May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up.
So the filing fees are on property exchange?
On just about everything, actually. There's two or three exceptions, but the activities in the housing market have had tremendous impact on
it. So you can see where that would be down, and then the percentage on delinquent you would think would be up, but I...
Madam Chair, Representative Hannah, yes, it is actually up. It's offset somewhat, but not enough to maintain the levels that it was at the beginning.
Thank you.
And Senator Verger and Representative Hannah, it's my understanding that each county is a donor into that fund, and just for the record, Lane County is more of a donor than a receiver of those dollars, and that's probably the same for some of the other larger counties.
Okay, other questions? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Alex, I know you've been following this very closely, but the bill that was printed this morning, how much of that retains the Walden-Schrader-DeFazio concept? This isn't a quiz. I just...
We've just run through the bill once here, even while we were waiting to testify, and
okay.
It's looking like some of the language we had expected with regards to the ONC is not in the bill. There is a markup on November 16th, tomorrow morning, so I think we'll probably hear much more in the next 24 hours.
Thank you.
Any other questions on these concepts, the conceptual amendments? We're looking at House Bill 3532. It was passed in 2007. Alex has brought to us these conceptual amendments. I think that we need to look very closely at this. This is pretty serious stuff. You start getting things into law. And I guess, how do you undo this? That's a question that came to my mind when I saw your bullet point at the bottom, because what if, I mean, this is very optimistic, but what if both bills went through Congress? We got an appropriation and we got the forest management bill through. Does that absolutely solve the problems of the counties and you wouldn't need any of these amendments?
Go ahead. Senator Verger, members of the committee, I should have said in the Senate, it may also be that there's an option that's just a one-year funding piece that moves forward.
Okay.
There was talk about a four-year. I've also heard about a one-year. That's why I suggested that if Congress passes a multi-year or there's some threshold level, because you're absolutely accurate. Counties have been, while very appreciative of the work that's going on in D.C., for instance, if only the Senate measure passed in Lane County, we're thinking that our budget shortfall, which is now being talked about at about $14 million, would be reduced to about $10.5 million.
$10.5 million?
So you can see we'd still be in a fairly significant hole.
And that's why I suggest that just having a bill pass does not necessarily solve the problem.
Yeah.
And for instance, a discussion about the task force and what it might do would probably still be a good idea to keep in mind.
Well, isn't Senator Wyden's bill 5 years? appropriations for 5 years from the...
would just drop it even if
you got 5 years ahead on your payments, your forest payments, that it would only drop it that small amount?
Senator Verger and members of the committee, as I discussed, the bill that was passed in 2008 had a four-year ramp down. The year four was not the previous years were just a 5% step down. Year four was a new formula that dropped us quite a bit. And then this new proposal, as I understand it, would drop us yet again from
yet
there.
Again.
So it is significantly less dollars.
Mm. Okay. Co-Chair Roblin.
In answer to your question about what next steps, we had our Rules Committee draft a bill regarding CAFA that we anticipate sending to revenue to start having that conversation in this session. So we have a process which we hope has a relating clause big enough for them to do look at this stuff, and I would encourage our revenue people to start, because they have been engaged in this in the past, to continue to have the conversations. So that's
Co-Chair Rowe, what is the time frame on the rules process? It's in rules, but
What happens is rules can, in our side of the building, rules, if the two can agree, can have a bill drafted. That bill will come back to the floor as a first reading.
Okay.
We will assign to revenue. And that has already started. The drafting, they may actually have it back. I think we're close on that.
But we're on schedule for this session. We can get everything done by the...
It can be done, depending on if they can figure out some things.
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, it obviously requires substantial cooperation in both chambers to speed the process along.
Well, that means it's going to get done.
Anyway.
All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Would it be safe to say this little white paper that you have on the conceptual amendments, I presume that this has been shopped with the affected, AOC's weighed in on it, there's generalized agreement?
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, the assessor in Lane County is chair of the legislative committee for the Assessors Association, and she's had a number of conversations with her colleagues over the last several days, and as my understanding is, they're with this, the concept being limited to a one-year, a temporary mandate, if you will.
Thank you. All right. Yes.
We did work on this amendment with Alex, and our interest is in minimizing the revenue loss to the taxing districts. We recognize that the current statutes that are in place that are supposed to be a safety net for minimizing that loss, the Department of Revenue stepping in probably causes more problems than it helps, and so this is not, to be honest, a good solution. But it's maybe the best of the bad solutions that we have for us. And a key to this for us is the ability for the Department of Revenue to work with the county to target the cuts that the county is taking, so as to minimize the loss to the other revenue districts. And in Lane County, half of that goes to schools. So we have a very vested interest in it as a state as well.
Well, it's clear to me that you show in your testimony a level of understanding of the crisis that the counties are in, and I appreciate that, and we obviously expect the agency to do everything they can in this kind of situation, because it is an emergency for the counties. So thank you all for your presentation. And now, committee, we're going to look at something that I think is a tremendous piece to the puzzle here, and Mike MacArthur will come. We're going to talk about LC 313 relating to county road funds.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mike MacArthur, Association of Counties. I would suggest to you that perhaps this piece of the fixes that we're putting in place is the most urgent. in particular, as counties are going into the budget process right now, they're deciding who they're going to lay off. If they had this tool, it may forestall layoffs, and particularly in public safety, once you lay people off, it's really hard to get them back. So the idea is quite simple, and that is that counties be able to access their road funds, if they have road reserves, from the Secure Rural Schools Act, not the constitutionally protected road highway trust fund, only from the Secure Rural Schools side, to take a to move that money into road patrol or other road-related public safety functions. And there's a sufficient nexus that was established with Lane County and Douglas County that can work. So what we're asking, we've looked at a number of different scenarios to describe what counties would be eligible for this. And really, as I've surveyed the counties and talked to them, there's only four that are interested, four that are able to and interested in pursuing this option. So our recommendation to you is simply name them, as we did Lane and Douglas in statute, and say they're eligible for a certain period of time to access the road funds, either through a transfer or a loan. And so those counties would be Coos, Curry, Josephine, and Klamath.
All right, you have, committee members, I'm sure you see the draft that is in your paperwork in front of you on the LC-313. Would you like to just read the summary summarize it so that people listening really understand? We have a number of people that are interested in the hearing here that are not in the room.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Simply put, this statute allows counties who have significant road reserves to access those funds for road patrol. And we currently allow Lane and Douglas to do this. This request is to expand that authority to Coos, Curry, Josephine, and Klamath.
Co-Chair Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to put a sort of a common sense side of the explanation, not only for members of the committee here, but for those who might be listening, so that they understand why we're having this conversation and you understand the magnitude of what we're talking about. Because you've heard the suggested counties, Curry, Josephine, Coos, and Klamath counties, but understand this. The reason this is important is because those four counties, among them, could face a situation in which they would reach the point of insolvency while at the same time having significant, and I mean very significant, resources in their county road fund that they have no fungibility for. So a county could get to the point where they're insolvent, they no longer have public safety except for maybe a sheriff, and they have, in the case, I'll use the case of Klamath County, who at June 30, 2011, would have almost $102 million in the bank. Now, most Oregonians would look and say, you're telling us you're insolvent and you can't do anything, and you got $102 million in the bank. Can't we give them some flexibility to use that to prop up for a small time period their public safety? And this is what we're talking about. I want people to understand this is an emergency only ask in these counties' cases, but you literally are looking at counties who would become insolvent with millions of dollars in the bank they just can't use. That's point number one. Point number two that I want to make clear, some of these mentioned counties, Curry specifically, legitimately are worried that we don't want to deplete our road funds. So they have asked for an opportunity to make the request from the road fund, if it were necessary, a potential loan. So we've got to also draft into this language, not specifically for Curry, but so that any of the mentioned counties, should their county commissioners say, this is an emergency, we either need to be able to use it, or in the case of Curry or any other with that concern, we'll use it, but we'll pay it back. So there needs to be a provision that says we can do this. But remember, this is an emergency only. It is at the request of those counties, but you're going to have counties facing insolvency with millions of dollars in the bank that they can't use. That's why that's the fix, if you will.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
And I just want to make it clear as well that we have had good examples by Lane and Douglas over the last few years to identify exactly how much, what, where, and whatever, without getting into the constitutional or legal questions. They have found a way to do that. They have lent their assistance to other counties, if this becomes available, so that they don't get themselves in a problem where they have to pay it back because they choose some of the wrong ones. And in both those cases, they have been very sparing with what they have not taken from that fund the amount they could take. They've taken the amount that they go along and just take a minimal amount to make sure that they keep their road patrols going. And I think they've set a good example of where we can go in the future. And again, the bill has been drafted. It probably needs some work, but we're expecting that's going to go to revenue as well, because this is kind of a revenue issue.
Beth, would you like to?
Senator Pruzanski.
Senator Pruzanski.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Senator Pruzanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike, I just want to put on the record and make sure I have clarification. I appreciate the when we look at the draft on page 1 on lines 19 and 20 where it says how the funds can be expended is for patrolling roads, which should keep us from having any conflict with misuse of those funds for other purposes. But I guess when you continue on, it does have a qualifier, only if the average amount of monies received by the counties over the 10-year immediate preceding the current fiscal year is greater than the 10% of the monies deposited into the general fund account for that same 10-year period. Is this going to impact who's going to actually be able to handle or, let's say, access the money? I mean, we hear that some of these counties may have the money, but are they going to meet that qualifying test?
Madam Chair, Senator Pruzanski, this was the attempt to put the sideboards on it that the committee talked about last time. We're suggesting a different approach. We're suggesting simply amend the current statute to add four counties and not abandon this approach, because this won't work. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah. Co-chair.
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Pruzanski. I think also there that we can clarify this even further. Again, the mentioned counties are Curry, Josephine, Coos, and Klamath. Coos doesn't have enough money in their reserve fund to even be listed.
Right.
Curry, Josephine has less than 4 months of reserve. So, frankly put, they're out of the picture as well. So, of the listed counties, Curry is a perfect example. They basically have 9 years of reserve. Nearly $40 million, and Klamath at the previously mentioned $102 million, they've got 7 years. So because of the way it's written and the fund possibility, only two of the counties does this resolve any immediate problem for them.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair,
yes.
If I could elaborate on the point that was being made earlier. Curry County has a memo that I think you have with their logo on it, suggested changes to ORS 294-468, which clarifies statute. There's some disagreement among county council about how this would work, and Curry County is particularly nervous about the current language and statute that would allow them to do what they want to do in terms of a loan. And so we're asking for a couple of modest changes to statute that would clarify the ability to transfer from one constitutionally dedicated fund to another fund, and to govern the length of time before that money is paid back. So I would ask that as we draft this other legislation, that we consider these requests from Curry County to make it crystal clear how this works.
Along those lines, is the relating clause big enough in this LC to do that, or are we going to have to draft another piece of legislation? I need to know if we need to, when we leave here, draft a new piece of legislation.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, it seems to me that this is a different issue. So I think it's another LC.
Okay.
That's my.
We need to get together
no,
fairly
I'm
quickly
law.
To get that going. So, okay.
Yes, I am concerned about the time.
Right, so am I. So.
And I think that in this building, sometimes it's hard to prioritize, so you have to get in the line. and that makes it far more difficult. So any other comments, Mr. McArthur?
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd just like to elaborate a little bit on your question earlier about what's going on at in Congress.
Yes.
And the legislation that was dropped today and scheduled for markup tomorrow is called, it's H.R. 419, the Federal Forest County Revenue Schools and Jobs Act of 2012. Now, I think it's important to note that the funding level here contains a proposal for a bridge, because we know that if this management plan were to go into place, it's going to take a while before it generates revenue. So there is some bridge funding here, but this is a totally different approach than you have in the Senate. So at some point, these two perhaps come together and there's some compromise. But we think that there's so much uncertainty about that nothing, in fact, may happen this year. But there's agreement that something should happen, so there may be a proposal to have some bridge funding. But it's unlikely that that'll happen before county budgets are already approved, in my opinion. So while this is a good sign, that we're pleased that there's action at the congressional level, it's still very uncertain.
I would suggest that because no one has had anything to read and to look at, it has made it a lot more confusing, because if you don't know what the bill actually says. But I think that there was a strategy in D.C. that they wanted to do it this way, and so that it would move quickly. You're going to read it today, and then it's just going to be right out of the chute. But I think that's one of the reasons that these very two different bills have not had more coordination in that, because there was nothing for instance, Senator Wyden to read about this one. But anything else?
Well, I'd just like to thank the committee for their consideration of these small measures. They seem small, but I think that's the way we get there, with numerous small fixes to the system to patch things up, to keep going until we can find more permanent solutions. So I really thank you for your time and consideration here.
You're very welcome, and I think I can speak well for the committee that everyone here is taking it very seriously. We're trying to think of every way in the world that we can help counties and that you can continue, and also to try to remove any blocks that you have in front of you that keep you from being able to provide services. Committee, this is an informational meeting, as you know, so we're not going to be voting on anything today. You've had information on the amendments to House Bill 3532. You've had a draft on LC 313. You have possibilities of another draft. And so I think we're moving along, but maybe not as rapidly as I would hope. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Based on what Speaker Hannah was saying, if indeed we're going to name counties, and we had this discussion last session about expansion of the counties in the Act, it does create some interest among the people back in the counties. I would suggest if there's only two counties that hit the trigger, let's not put all four in. You know, we're just creating unnecessary angst and chaos with the population if they're named and it doesn't trigger.
Thank you, Senator. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, in the case of Curry, it would be a loan, so you got to list them. Even though they don't have the reserve, it would be a loan amount. So I'm willing to have that conversation as well. But those were the requesting counties, and
well, I understand, Madam Chair. We heard from constituents in all of the counties that wanted consideration last session, and we chose not to muddy the waters where it was working well. I understand that we need to look at adjustments.
Senator Prezansky.
Thank you. Co-Speaker Hannah, the one thing I guess I want a clarification on the loan part. Are we potentially setting, let's say if a county such as Curry took out a loan and they weren't able to pay it back, do we set them up for some type of obligations or on a default as to you know, that misuse of the money, I think you're seeing maybe some implications from the federal side.
Senator Perioli.
Well, I think the cautionary is to find out if there are any implications from the federal side, but if the counties make a loan, it's only because they anticipate being able to pay it back. If they are not able to pay it back because of insolvency, then I think that's sort of a self-liquidating problem for the counties.
Right.
That'd be a guess.
Yeah, I don't think counties get away from their debt.
Okay. Yeah. Other questions or comments? Any comments from my co-chairs?
Counties,
nope. All right. Then if there's no other business to come before the body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.